Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org.
It's nice to see so many people here today. So, it's an interesting time of the year, heading into the darkest week of the year right now. It's the last week before the days begin to lengthen again. And I'm appreciating the sun coming out a little bit. Every little bit helps. It can be difficult for those of us that have some sensitivity to that light going away. We've become very aware of time and light right now. So Sun-Faced Buddha, Moon-Faced Buddha is the title of the talk today. And this is also the title of a koan, a riddle, one of those Zen riddles from the Blue Cliff Record. It's case number 3. One of my favorites. And usually when we hear one of these stories, there's a commentary or an introduction to it, and then the story itself, and then a poem written about the story. But I'm just going to read the koan itself rather than all of the commentary. The great master Basso was seriously ill. The chief priest of the temple came to pay his respects. He asked, "How do you feel these days?" The master said, "Sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha." Now, Basso was an 8th century Chinese Zen master. He had many, many students, including Hyakujo, who was the next one in the lineage that leads down through Rinzai to us today. So he's a very important person to us. He taught in many different energetic ways. One of the things Basso was known for was dynamic use of movement, yelling, hitting with sticks. A lot of those Zen stories have to do with Basso. He had a very strong effect on many students through his Zen ki, his Zen energy that came from his teaching. And we may or may not be able to relate to that style of teaching nowadays, but the fact of the matter is every single one of us is in this room today because of Basso's teaching. We would not be here if he hadn't presented his Zen energy in some sort of a dynamic, strong way that allowed the lineage to continue. So it's important to let that sink in, that when we're talking about Basso, we're not talking about some old dead Chinese guy that has nothing to do with us, saying annoying things that are a little cryptic, and we have to try to figure out what they mean. But he's literally critical to us, each of us being here in this room today. So if we look up the reference Sun-Faced Buddha, Moon-Faced Buddha, to know specifically what Basso is referring to, these are the names of two of over 1,000 Buddhas in a sutra that was chanted at the time. Sutras kind of come and go in terms of their popularity, and this was one that was important in the Mahayana tradition back then to recite the names of the Buddha. Sun-faced Buddha was said to live for over 1,800 years, while moon-faced Buddha lives only a day and a night. But even without looking that up, we can gather from Basso saying sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha, that there are different kinds of light out there. Maybe one's stronger, one's a little more delicate. One lasts longer, one is a little shorter, but they're both still light. It's a very important point. I can kind of relate to Basso here. I just recently went back into chemotherapy for cancer for a third time, and so I really can relate viscerally to what Basso must have felt lying there. People are always asking me how I feel, and it's hard to know how to answer. One week the oncologist said that I looked rather pale, and she said, "How do you feel? You look rather pale." "I don't know. I feel like I feel." The next day, the very next day, our family doctor told me I looked quite strong. "How do you feel?" There's really no way to respond to that. You do what you can with what energy you have, with what light you have, with what time you have. That's all you can do. I can imagine Basso lying in bed, and he's no longer able to teach in that active, dynamic way that he was known for years. He was old. I'm sure in this story he was considered to be nearing death, and quite honestly, the head priest asked kind of a stupid question. "So how do you feel?" "Not great," I'm sure would be his answer. "Not very good right now." But of course, that question also contains the hope that the teacher will recover somewhat at least and continue to teach for a while longer. We all want that, just a little while longer, a little more time. Living our lives in the conventional way that we do, though, day by day, moment by moment, good days and bad days, we create a reality that is described by Dogen, who is another important teacher from our past, in his great text, Being Time, which is part of the Shobo Genzo, his collected writings. And he says, "We place ourselves all in succession and consider this to be the entire universe." We place ourselves all in succession, this, then this, then this, then this, and consider this to be the entire universe. We must consider each individual and each thing of the entire universe as one time. Things do not hinder things. Equally, time does not hinder time. Therefore, time awakens mind. Mind awakens time simultaneously. Practice and awakening are thus. All of us are in succession, we see it. Such is the truth of us as time. So he's saying, this is how we experience our lives. There's a moment, and then in the next moment, and the next moment, and we see things all strung out in succession like that. And we begin to worry, okay, how many minutes are left? How much time do I have left? This is how we tend to think of things. But Dogen goes on to say this is only a part of the picture. Because of this truth of us as time, we must study that in the entire world there are myriads of things and hundreds of blades of grass, and that each of these things and each blade of grass is, one by one, the entire world. With this lively view, our practice begins. In other words, we must be able to deconstruct the reality that we create with our concepts of time and space and things and see them for what they are. If we can begin to experience time as itself, meaning as not time, no longer a concept, but an integral part of actuality. This is what Dogen calls being time. If we can If we can let go of this sense of time being limited, things open up for us in a much more spacious way. With this view, a thing is a thing, Dogen says. A blade of grass is a blade of grass. Yet with this view, a thing is also no longer a thing. A blade of grass, no longer a blade of grass. At this very moment, each being time becomes one time. Being grass, being event, are equally time. Remember, I said that we are here in this room because of Basso's teaching. If he had not taught with his dynamic quality, we would not be here. So there's this intimate connection we have with him. We are not separate from Basso in this way. And also, if we think of it, kind of the flip side of that, without us here, Basso doesn't live either. If we are not here in this room practicing, there is no Basso. He's gone as well. Gone. So this thing that we call time, Basso comes from ancient China. We're here in modern day America. This thing that we call time collapses on itself if we really deeply contemplate it. In other words, what we pull out from our lived experience and conceptualize as time is not actually separate from being. We can't categorize it as a short time, a long time, no time. Of course, we still need calendars, we still need schedules, we still need our smartphones to get us through the day, a sense of priorities. All of that is also true, but it's not the whole story. To the extent we can grasp that time does not define us or limit us, then we are not limited by it. There's an expression, I remember a poster that we used to have at college, something like, learn as if you're going to live forever, live as if you're going to die tomorrow. There's several versions of it. And it's a very good, actually, a summary of this idea that time is not something that limits us. We limit time in how we think of it. Time is what we make it and how we use it. It's a mutually agreed upon concept. Don't get stuck on it. Don't miss the actual experience. Sometimes a minute can seem like an hour. We've all had that experience, or vice versa. Time just flies by. The point is not to judge or to assess the worth of an experience by these conventional measures and leave it at that. There really and truly is no short time versus long time if time and being are one. There is no bright light or pale light if being and time are one. All conditions are contained within each experience when that experience is completely, fully experienced. So Basso may be dying in this story, but he's still able to teach, not with a stick or a shout, but perhaps with a soft whisper. And there is truly no difference if we're paying attention. Any thoughts or comments?
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.